We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. This week, I'm chatting with Sarah Edmonds and Tammy Lawrence, the owners of Banquet Altair and Workshop, a Vancouver-based design studio. All of Tammy and Sarah's products are conceived, designed, printed, and produced in Canada with a fine attention to affordability and environmental sustainability. They offer screen-printed, signed and dated prints, stationery, textiles, as well as clothing and jewelry. They've also licensed work and collaborated with large brands such as the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Terrain, Anthropology, Land of Nod, and others to create exclusive products and designs. Today's episode is a good one. We're talking about taking risks with new products and why it took them over 4 years to bring their textiles to market, why you need to follow your passions when making business decisions, and why this Canadian company chooses to exhibit at US-based wholesale shows. Hey, Tammy. Hey, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Katie.
Of course. So how did you two meet? What prompted you to start this business?
We met through a mutual friend of ours, Sydney Hermont, who's an amazing artist and was a curator. I moved back from Montreal after finishing my communication degree and met Sarah because she was working with Sydney at an art gallery. And we became fast friends. And from the start, we kind of talked about doing something together.
Some kind of collaboration or project.
And we had lots of ideas from ridiculous ideas.
We were going to combine a handbag bookkeeping company.
Oh, wow.
Make bags and do bookkeeping. That was our first idea.
I had been working in television from the time I moved back to Vancouver. So something outside of that always drew me in. I think I always knew I would go into business of some sort. And Sarah, I think, has always just been a genius creative person.
Just a maker, so. Always making things.
Did you have your own business prior to this one, Sarah?
No, I mean, I always did like craft sales and I painted and I did a little sewing and things like that. But I went to art school and ended up working in galleries. So I worked in commercial and nonprofit artist-run centers here in Canada for a few years before I realized that arts administration was not the career path for me. And I wanted to go back to making things and doing creative. I also became a mom and I wanted to work at home and have that flexibility. So being creative and following that.
I love it. Were you guys starting Banquet Workshop as a side hustle or did you both leave the other jobs that you were doing to make this your full-time gig from the start?
We left the other jobs. It was definitely the intention to work for ourselves and build the dream.
We started when Sarah had her second child and I had my first child. So in Canada, you get actually a year mat leave. So it was over that time we started kind of working together because Sarah had already started making prints and some cards. And I was like, let's promote this. You are amazing. We got it, you know. And then through that realized, oh, actually, it's a pretty complementary partnership. So in the second, when our kids turned one, was when I went back to school to do the small business program, which is part of a government run program here, where you can extend your mat leave. Sorry, I feel like this is always going to make people in the States jealous. I feel so bad.
I was just going to say, yeah, I'm so jealous.
I know.
But tell us about it, because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, we pay a lot of taxes to live in Canada, and through that, we get healthcare and some education. So you could do a program where they extended your mat leave, and you could start a business. So you write a business plan, you make contacts, you come up with the plan for the year of how to do a startup. And so Sarah and I were like, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to really take it seriously and start Banquet.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. As you were talking, I was thinking back on my career path. And when I had my first two children, I had a pretty generous leave from my corporate day job that I was at. And I remember using those 6 months and then 3 months for my second. Hustling, I mean, I very much enjoyed the time with my child, don't get me wrong. But like, as somebody that's so go, 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 that was a really nice time to focus on my family and also focus on building the businesses that I was trying to run, because I wanted that to be my full time that I was, you know, working on. And so it's interesting to hear other moms say that they leverage that time not only with their family and their growing, you know, their growing families, but also for their education and for building these businesses. So,
and then with the, you realize with a small business, it's all work all the time, but also there is that downtime where you can be with your children or you can be working from home during naps. Like, I think, you know, that first year, it was like nap time and nighttime was when we really got our work done. You know, like Sarah had two kids and she was just in a mania of like creativity, and then, you know, working out of our home. It's like, oh, there's the diapers on top of a box of, you know, cards, or every bed in Sarah's house had prints underneath. Or you realize like you just make do. And, you know, in those beginning stages of being a mom and starting a business, it's kind of a deadly combo, but an amazing combo at the same time.
It is. I think there's a lot of luxury to the, you do have flexibility in time, but it's also dictated by, you know, these children that need things from you too. So your time is very much split, but I can resonate, and I'm sure many of the listeners can resonate with the nap time and nighttime hustle as well. So I imagine that having a business partner provides a lot of benefits, you know, somebody to brainstorm with, bounce ideas around with. You mentioned earlier that you kind of have different roles in the business, but how do you split your responsibilities as business partners, and what are each of you kind of leading within the business?
I think it works because our roles are pretty clearly defined and we both have our strengths and weaknesses that are distinct from each other. We have our specific skill sets that are complementary.
I can't draw. I'm joking.
You know what
you're saying. I know, it's true. Sarah does all the creative, and then I do more of the sales and business side of things, but always, I would say, always the twain shall meet, you know, like, obviously, when Sarah's working on cards, she'll pitch like 30 cards and it'll be like, yes, yes, no, yes, no, you know, like colors, we'll discuss stuff like that.
Talking.
And then, with the business side, obviously Sarah has to be involved. It's her business. But she's not going to call up someone to try to get them to buy, you know, but you do it like she does the accounting, you know, just stuff always. It always intermingles in some way, but at the same time, I'm not like cracking the whip on her and she's not on me. Mostly. Until it's like, oh my God, we have to pay our bills. That's or, oh my God, we need new stuff. But for the most part, we know what needs to happen.
Did that feel like a seamless process from the start because you came in with different skill sets and interests, or is that something that developed over time as your business grew and your partnership grew?
No, I think it was very organic and natural. We just knew what we wanted to do and what we were good at.
Yeah. And then we divide the stuff no one wants to do.
Yeah, we share that because there's a lot of that too.
That is true. Yeah. There's a lot of minutiae, small business owners, that we have to manage. That's true. You guys have offered a wide range of products, including, you know, the stationery items we talked about in the prints, but you also offer textiles, clothing, and jewelry. Which products did you start with, and what was the motivation to expand into other areas?
Well, we started with the Sea Animals of the Pacific Northwest screen print, which just was the right thing at the right time. Something happened, grew out of our minds, and we knew we had something. And then, but a lot of the other things have been more people approaching us, opportunities present themselves. We kind of, I think, want to try everything, and we want to make what we love. So the things that we see out there that are exciting to us are inspiring, and textiles is a good example. My background is in textiles. When I first went to school more than 20 years ago, I was in a textiles program and doing screen printed yardage and weaving and those things. And so I've been looking for a long time the way to get back to that. So,
and when we started, some of the first things we did were kids art kits. And one of those was a screen printed snake that you could paint and stuff. So that's was the beginning, was always wanting to do textiles and yardage, but it took years to find the right thing. So there's something like that is something we started with a plan in the first year that was definitely on the list. But it took us 4 to 5 years to get it off the ground. So you just,
when you say it took you 4 to 5 years to get it off the ground, this is not a unique challenge, but I would like to hear you talk more about why it took so long. Was it the sourcing of manufacturing? Was it just how to bring it all to market? Do you mind sharing some of that story?
Well, I think that when we started, it came out of this, like, want to do everything local. So, you know, we have an amazing printer here, two amazing printers here that do our work for us. And they're like true artists. They love color. They love working with us. I think it's fun for them. Okay. And we wanted that same relationship with the screen printing of the yardage. But in Canada and in the US, actually, it's a dying industry. So there's only a few places where you can do small minimums.
Of continuous yardage.
Of continuous yardage. I mean, you could screen print a t-shirt, which we also have done, you know, like, but we wanted to make the linen and make, you know, larger products. But we did finally find someone in Toronto who helped us with our first runs, who ended up going out of business, you know, a year later. And he was also such a talent. So yeah, it's just been a trial and error of finding people.
A lot of it was building the foundation where we had the finances and the confidence to bring it to market, because it was a new line for us. We didn't know a lot about housewares, that part of the industry. So,
and it is expensive to print yardage, and you know, we decided we needed to do linen, which is also like, oh, okay. So the minute you're buying just the linen, you're like, that's a lot of money we just put into this product. Like, you know, fingers crossed that this pays off, and it has, and that's why we started. Then we can, you know, we were doing pillows, tea towels, napkins. And one of our dearest friends is a fashion designer who we love, Suni Ling. And so she was like, oh, I kind of want to use your linen for, you know, my next collection. And so that's, again, a natural collaboration that came out of all, we've been friends with her forever. And then it was like, oh, we can actually do something cool together.
I love hearing how you have taken, you had this challenge before you of getting the yardage printed because you wanted to sell it as yardage, but then you use that as a launching point for all these other things that you want to then use that material for, you know, your pillows and now the dresses and things like that. I think it's a really fascinating story from the standpoint that it does take a long time to bring new things to market. And I think it's very important for people listening to hear there are a multitude of challenges, you know, the sourcing, the financial upfront that you have to put into this. And then too, you talked about being scared of, will this take off? Will there be a market for this? And I think that's a real fear that a lot of makers have when they are bringing something new to market, whether it's, you know, some sort of new kit or whatever. And I think too, since most of our community is in the stationery world, it's a lot less scary to bring a greeting card to market, right? Like we've got that process in place and we know what it can sell for and we know what the demand is. But something like what you were doing, it was very different. So I applaud you for, I know it was probably frustrating at the time to know that this was taking years to come to fruition, but I applaud you for, you know, staying the path and being diligent about it, because your work is beautiful and it's really fun seeing it on different things now.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Have you, given this long path for some of these projects, how do you decide which products to move forward with, you know, which ideas you have that you should actually take action on and which ones aren't worth manufacturing? Maybe after you've done some of the research, you've decided that, no, this isn't going to work. What's kind of your thought process there, or how you make these tough decisions?
We actually have a really organic, is what I'm calling. We were just talking about this. It's what we want to make. We just make it. And sometimes that's not the smartest business move, but it's really true. It's being true to ourselves. You know, it's like, you don't always want to jump on a trend just because, you know, you see other people doing it. All the stuff that we've done has really come out of a natural idea, or something that a conversation we've had. A lot of it does go back to when we first started, of like, wouldn't it be great if we could, you know, reupholster a chair or do, you know, do these things. But yeah, it's not always the money makers that are the things we love to make. So paper still is the backbone of our business. Like stationery and our prints mm-hmm. are where mm-hmm. We still make our money. And being able to do the linen is almost like, it's not a vanity project, I wouldn't call it, but it's like the icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, the paper paves the way for us to move into these other categories. But yeah, it is a risk. We don't have a spreadsheet or anything. Like I heard one of your podcasts, I was like, oh my God, I need to get that spreadsheet, whatever that spreadsheet is, where it's like, you'll make money or you will not make money. But you know, sometimes I wonder if the spreadsheet said we wouldn't make money, if that would stop us from doing it. You know, like mm-hmm. it's a funny.
I think a lot of the times we start small, we test the waters, we do little small things, or we have a really great community here of creative women that inspire us and support us, and we can run ideas past them. And then if we go forward with things, ultimately we're a business. We want to make money. We want to support our families. So at some point we have to be really strict. We have to be strict about it, and we have to say, okay, this isn't going to work, and let it go. Float off into the universe.
Or we'll try it and see that it didn't work. Yeah. And then it's like, well, we probably won't do notebooks again because we love our notebooks, but printing in Canada for notebooks, we can't make a good margin on them.
And I think also living in Vancouver makes us a little bit harder on ourselves in terms of things being commercial, because it's a really expensive place to live. It's expensive to run a business. It's a challenge, and we can't forget about that.
Yeah. Sarah, I love what you said too about you are running a business here. Mm-hmm. As kind of the creative mind behind this business, is it hard for you to let go of ideas that you're just in love with?
Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And I like the weird stuff. I like the, you know, I want to just hide away and make advent calendars with an X-Acto knife by myself. And
I didn't say the advent calendar.
No. But to be creative, to be an artist, you have to be somewhat self-indulgent. And I can't always. So mm-hmm. I have to be more practical. But, you know, and some things really work. Like when we did that neon heart, that felt like a huge risk mm-hmm. at the time. It felt like,
why was that? May I ask?
The color, like it felt like I love neon. I love the idea of having a neon, but does everybody want neon on their house? It was kind of before the very beginning of the big neon trend, and it's a lot of neon. It's a big, bright thing, but mm-hmm. it's been magic, and it works magic. It just was, it's perfect. So,
and it took us a year or two to even do it. That was our first idea, but we were like, maybe we should do the raspberry heart. Oh, let's do a gold heart. And then we're like, can we finally just do this neon? Like this was the original.
It was a really good lesson for us that it's okay to take these risks.
And trust our instincts. Mm-hmm. That's where it kind of goes back to, well, we love it. So mm-hmm. other people will love it too.
Yeah. Well, I love the neon heart. It's sitting in my office right now behind me. It brings me joy every day. So thank you, ladies, for taking the risk and creating it. You know, you have done licensing work and collaborations. You've mentioned already about some of the textile things, but you've done some big things with some exciting brands, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, Terrain, Anthropology, and Land of Nod. The list goes on, but those were some of the big ones I had. You know, did you pursue licensing opportunities or did they seek you out?
They found us.
Yeah.
I think that's something we always thought we would want to do. Mm-hmm. But doing the shows, that definitely was something that we found because we did the stationery show. The very mm-hmm. first one was Land of Nod, they found us our very first stationery show.
I think at the stationery show in particular, there are teams that come by from all these big brands that are looking for the newbies, and which is great, but also I think they're really it was a great way for us to experiment and learn a lot about licensing, because you can make a lot of money and you can make nothing. I think our very mm-hmm. first licensing agreement, we took it to a lawyer, we didn't know what we were doing, we paid $500 for the lawyer to look at the contract, and we got our first check for $62 or something, and we never got another check. So you make some expensive mistakes and trial and error, but that's how it started.
I think that's a similar story for me as well. I didn't know what I was doing when I was approached at the stationery show. And, you know, there's so many different criteria too with licensing. Those contracts, mm-hmm. every contract is different. You know, is it an exclusive deal? What's the payment structure around it? All these things. So,
and it's so foreign. It's such foreign language when you're starting out. It's a whole other, and the pricing structure for sure.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, when you get approached by these brands, you don't want to say no. You want to say yes. It's exciting. But at the same time, you do need to know what you're entering into and whether it's advantageous or not.
Absolutely.
So, and sometimes you just don't know that.
And the stuff we've done for those companies are things we wouldn't have, that we wanted to do on our own, but we never would have been able to do on our own. Like Land of Nod, we did like a full advent, cloth advent calendar that is like 4 or 5 feet, you know, we wouldn't be able to make that on our own. And Anthropologie was doing wallpaper, which of course we would love to do, but it's like, for me, I'm like, how would I even sell wallpaper? Like, I don't even get it. And mm-hmm. so being able to work with these companies is such a great opportunity to make things that mm-hmm. we just don't have the resources to make.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. It allows you to play in a different space with a different medium. And like you said, you don't have to have the infrastructure to actually create these products or source them or financially cover them. So,
and I think that wallpaper is probably when we realized, oh, we could really do the yardage. Mm-hmm. Was just like on a repeat pattern, large scale. It's like, oh, okay, we can see it.
Yeah.
So maybe we can't do wallpaper, but let's try to finally do the yardage.
Mm-hmm. So you guys mentioned the National Stationery Show. How far, I also know that you do New York now. How far into running your business did you start wholesaling? Was it straight away or did you wait a while?
Locally, we did right away.
Well, locally, I was doing craft sales. And then I think when Tammy came on and started doing this business program, part of us building the business into a successful brand involved a pricing structure that worked for wholesale.
Yep. Can you share some of the challenges of doing a US-based show such as New York Now or a National Stationery Show when you're coming from Canada? I mean, you have some different considerations to think about there before signing up for that show.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. And the border is the biggest issue of all, getting our work.
Is it? Tell us more about that.
I think North America, we're still friendly to doing business together, but right now we have a great free trade agreement. And something like moving forward, we're scared about is just that NAFTA, something is going to happen with NAFTA, where right now we can ship, all our stuff is made in Canada, so we're able to ship and not have a ton of duty or taxes on it. And it's scary to think that that will change. Mm-hmm. With doing the shows, we just, when we first started doing it, we had Manny Stone build our walls. We shipped our product to our hotel. You know, we'd walk away from like a $4,000 booth and be like, okay, we broke even, you know, and like buy IKEA furniture and just leave it to donate. And it just kind of, as a West Coaster, it just made us ill. Just be like, oh my God, the glass and the frames just went in the garbage. Like just stuff like that just made us crazy.
No paper recycling at a paper show.
Yeah. That's just crazy. So we started, we built a booth and now we store it there. And I think as a Canadian, that's like the best thing. I mean, also as a West Coaster, I think it's a, you know, the best thing you can do these shows. And yeah, and ship everything in advance. And
I think also we did our first show and we were like, okay, we got the space at last minute. Let's see what happens. And then you get there and you realize it's a 3-year plan. If you're going to make a go of doing the trade shows, you have to commit to being there for more than 1 year.
Yeah. I talk about that at Paper Camp quite a bit, the necessity of being there year over year and thinking long term with it. It's not just one and done. I tell a story about how there was a buyer that came to my booth 4 years in a row before he finally placed an order. Mm-hmm. And I think he just wanted to know that I was going to continue to be around and that my business was sustainable. And it's interesting to hear you say the same, because I agree. I think it's like huge. A longer term game.
I think also to having a bit of a foundation before you commit to doing these shows too, having stores that you know are going to be there to order from you, to meet face to face. If you come there with nothing, with nobody, it's nobody knows who you are. It's really hard.
It is. I agree. And, you know, it's up to us as exhibitors to do all of the marketing and to get people to our booth. But as you mentioned, if people aren't familiar with our products, if they're not familiar with our company name, it's hard to get them there. So,
and I think that first show was hilarious because we knew nothing. Like, I think it was the first year you guys did your, like the online phone call boot camp. Like, I was like, oh my God, on Twitter, oh my God, we're doing the stationery show. And Rachel was like, you should do this class. And thank God, or we would have been like a joke, like with our craft fair set up, you know? And then we had a huge booth because we signed up so late. So they gave us, they're like, oh, it's the greatest.
The greatest.
Like, you know, and paid all this money just because we had no, we didn't know anyone who had done the show. I think I had a call with Evan from Yellow Owl, and he was great and really supportive. But, and then we did the trade show call on setting up a booth, and that was just like so helpful. So when we showed up, because Sarah had worked at a gallery, it was like our display just looked amazing. And I, not being, this is where I can be the fan of Sarah, you know, like I was just like, we look so awesome, but like our greeting cards didn't have greetings.
We didn't put greetings.
We didn't have, you know, like we had all these prints, but people are like, is that like, what is that? Is that art? Like, I think it was just like, no one really did prints
at
that time.
Our line sheet was a black and white photocopy.
Yeah. It was just like so pro and so not pro at the same time, like in equal amounts, I think. Like, you know, we had order forms, but I don't think we broke even at the show at all. But I think people were just like, wow, you have so much space in your booth because we just paid for all this space, but we didn't have enough product to fill it. Like, I think now at Gift, we have a booth that big, but we realized quickly, like, this is dumb. But, you know, I think those are the funny things that you do when you take a risk.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes not knowing is better than knowing. Because if you knew, you would not, we wouldn't have been able to have that kind of like who are those guys, you know?
Childbirth.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Well, I can absolutely relate. You guys have heard my story of how my booth got shut down by the fire marshal the day before. It was painful. But, you know, but you're right. You know, if we knew some of these hurdles we were going to hit along the way, I think it would definitely deter some people from moving forward. And those crazy enough to continue like us would still do so. But do you do any Canadian wholesale shows or do you stick to the
US?
We
don't. Yeah, we just do the two New York Nows, and then we've done the stationery show, but I think this year we're going to sit out stationery and just stay with doing the two gift shows.
Yeah, three shows a year is a lot.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I think when we started, the stationery show was the show for papermakers. That's the show you do. So it seemed like go big or go home in terms of whether we do an international show or do a Canadian show. We started.
Yeah. That was kind of how I felt too. Like if I'm going to do this, I really want to go to the place where all the buyers are and let's, you know, go there.
And so many buyers come from Canada.
Yes.
Or they did at that time. The dollar, I think, was par when we started. So it was, there were lots of Canadian buyers.
I think that's one thing with the Canadian thing is the dollar does affect our buyers coming to those shows. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at one point maybe we would do Toronto because of that. But for now, I think we have families and, you know, maybe in May we want to go somewhere like Portugal instead of the Javits Center.
You don't learn how to make towels.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend your vacation days in Javits?
No.
I'm teasing.
Actually, it's funny, but I think we've spent like probably 100 days in Javits. Yeah. I don't know if we need to spend more than that.
No. Well, we do have some alums doing Toronto and doing it well, so I'm happy to make those connections with you guys if you're interested in talking to them. Too.
Yeah, we've heard good things from our buyers here as well.
Good. Well, you have already dispensed quite a bit of advice as to what's worked for you, what hasn't worked. But if you're sitting down with somebody brand new to running a product-based business and they were just starting out, as somebody that's been doing this for a while, what would you tell them? What advice would you give?
I would say start local first. I think a lot of people just like decide they want to do a product line and then they go to New York Now or they go to NSS. Mm-hmm. And I think what helped us in the beginning was even just talking to our local buyer at a stationery shop, a store that's been around for 30 years. And she like is very honest, and maybe not all her advice is what we wanted to hear, but it made us think about our business. And then we have friends that own boutiques. So hearing their buying stories or what they're interested in from hearing from someone. Like, ask. Don't call on a Saturday, you know, like just things like that. I think it's just really good to, you don't have to do that for 3 years, but I think it's good for 6 months just to get a response from
ask,
your local.
Ask lots of questions.
Your local stores before. Yeah.
And it's a good way to test the marketplace because we're such a global economy now. What works in your city or town is going to work everywhere. So,
absolutely.
Sarah, would you add anything about creative or? You're like, be weird.
Be weird.
Stay weird.
Follow your dreams. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So what is next for Banquet Workshop? What do you guys have coming up? Do you have anything you want to share that you're releasing soon? Or
we're doing more linen and more dresses with Sunia. That'll be out in the new year. Valentine's is what we're promoting right now and still holiday. Mm-hmm. We're doing these affirmation prints. Yeah, now I'm thinking our next one should be Stay Weird.
Stay Weird.
Yeah. Sure. Should be. Yeah. I'm inspired. It will go up on your wall. We'll send it to
We're
you,
just
Katie.
Doing smaller
prints. But yeah, just anything bright, colorful is always our trajectory.
Happy.
Happy.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, where can people find you online if they want to purchase your amazing products or if they want to follow you on social media?
Everything's Banquet Workshop. com or at Banquet Workshop.
A new website. We just did a redesign.
Oh, that was the exciting thing.
Yeah, that's the exciting thing. It's a new website. And
like, oh, we have a newsletter where people sign up for it and it goes to the actual, you don't have to do anything. Yeah. Like, you know, we're in the future right now, Katie, and it feels really good.
Yeah, it feels good. Well, I don't know if I shared this with you, but I'm in the midst of starting a total new website overhaul too. And so I know firsthand what it feels like. It's a pretty big project. How did you guys, I'm sure you're happy to be on the other side, but how did it feel going through that process?
It was definitely time. Like, mm-hmm. I think there was so many things that we were limited by. You know, I'm pretty happy our old site actually managed to look good mm-hmm. for a very long time. But then there was things that, like having your Instagram on your website and it shows when you put, you know, like just beautiful things that you can do, you know, through in Shopify now. So and I think we're not even using it to its full potential. So
it sounds crazy, but we have been around long enough. The technology changed and we needed to play catch up.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the catalyst for me redoing our site as well. Like, I want to make it easier for our customers to find the information they need and get the help they need. I want to make it simple and quick. Like, it is pretty incredible how quickly technology changes and we need to adapt if we want to get our customers what they need. So
exactly. Sure. So yeah, we're really happy with it and it looks really pretty and you know, I think it really highlights the product, which is great. Yeah, and just being able to do all that linking. I think it's like everything being separate with social media, it's nice to have it all kind of integrated into one site.
Yeah, it's like you have a new online home.
Yeah, right. And it looks really like clean and pretty, not like my real home.
Well, ladies, I feel you on that one too.
That's social media. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, ladies, thank you so much for your time today. It was such a pleasure to catch up with you and to hear your story and for you to share your insight. I know our audience is going to gather a lot of great inspiration, but also just tactics that they can apply to their own business. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks Katie, for including us and also for connecting the community. It's so great what you've done.
It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
You've worked hard.
Thank you. Hey, friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.